I'm opening? We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to Popcorn's Talk, Anatomy of a Movie. Today we are doing Wild, and I am Chloe West, joined by Sarah and Dimitri.
Hello, folks.
Hello, hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good. I love this music. Already getting started. Like, I think that it represents the film really well. They had some really strong choices with their music, and it kind of brings you back to where the film was. So,
yeah.
It's a good intro song.
Yeah, good job.
And he didn't even see the movie.
Oh, nice. So, Wild is directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, who also did Dallas Buyers Club, same with the writer Nick Hornby, and then it's also based off of the very famous Oprah Club book written by Cheryl Strayed, played by Reese Witherspoon. So, let's get your guys' initial thoughts on the film.
So, I mean, there's been a lot of word about this movie, specifically on Reese's performance, mm-hmm. and I think that's why a lot of people are being drawn to see it. And I think that it was a very good choice for them to bring an A-lister into this film to get people out there, because it's a very, very interesting story, and I think Cheryl Strayed had a wonderful adventure, and it was kind of fun to see her perspective. I liked how they constructed the flashbacks. I liked the music. I liked a lot of the choices they made in making it feel very natural. I'm not sure if it takes the cake for my like favorite survival story, but I do like this portrayal of a woman. I
thought, yeah,
strong.
What about you, Dimitri?
I'm not sure if Reese Witherspoon can still be considered an A-lister, but I think this
Ouch!
What has she done prior to this that anybody was going to anymore? Like, since Walk the Line, I mean,
Walk the Line, Water for Elephants, all of the like,
Water for Elephants didn't do great, and like, she hasn't, after Walk the Line, her career has sort of kind of, you know, she was in that dopey McGee movie with Tom Hardy and Chris Pine, which I always forget the name of. Her career is sort of, let's just be honest, she sort of has taken a stumble. This movie, I think for her, like, this was something that she chose. You know, this, it was between this and Gone Girl, that she was associated with for a time, and she chose this one. And I think this is, in a sense, in a way, much like how, Matthew McConaughey's comeback picture was Dallas Buyers Club. Like, this, like, was the movie right for her at the time in her life. And I think her performance is great. I think it's the best she's done since, like, Walk the Line.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the movie itself was, I sort of kind of feel like you. I don't think, I enjoyed the craft, technique, performance. It's not a best picture movie for me. It was a trek. It was a journey film. I enjoyed the editing, and I liked how the story sort of kind of unfolded. But much like the character, towards the end of the movie, when she says, "I couldn't wait for this to be over," I was like, "I'm right there with you, sister. I've been walking through the woods, and I feel like I've been doing it with you. And it's time for me to go home and get rid." You know, not, I don't mean that I hated it. I just meant, yeah, it was good. But I didn't think it was great as a lot of praise has been thrown towards this movie. So again, caught in hype vortex. You know, it was a good movie. I didn't think fantastic.
Interesting. I read the book, and I think the movie is much better than the book.
Hmm.
It's one of those rare instances when the movie is better than the book. And it has a lot to do with the writing and the editing, because the book is linear. It doesn't do as many flashbacks. She sort of builds you up to why she's hiking. But in the book, Cheryl is very unlikable. You are constantly thinking, you're such an idiot. You're such an idiot. And they touch on little parts of that, but it's not so magnified in the movie as it was in the book. In the book, I mean, the boots get into it and the backpack. And you're like, how are you so dumb? How did you not train to hike over 1,000 miles. Like, what are you thinking? And I really enjoyed the movie coming from the book. And I was very, very skeptical with Reese as the choice because I actually hadn't seen a picture of the real Cheryl Strayed, so I didn't know what she looked like. But knowing, you know, that this woman is a heroin addict, you know, that she's also a nymphomaniac, I'm like, I can't picture Reese Witherspoon playing this character. And I'm very impressed with Reese's performance. I thought that she did such a good job, and I believed her the whole time. I totally was along the ride. And but I really did love the way that they set up the flashbacks, and they used the theme of this mother-daughter relationship and this mother-daughter love story to, like, and they strung it out throughout the whole film. I thought that that was really great, and that's sort of what led to all the flashbacks happening, which was nice. And I actually felt like the movie, when it ended, I was like, oh, it's over? Wow, that was much faster than I thought it was going to be. So I didn't feel like, oh, I'm so glad it's over. But I thought it was, I am really impressed that they were able to take a book and, you know, make it into a film in under 2 hours. I think that's really impressive.
How big was the, how big is it, not was the book, is the book? Like, do you recall?
Maybe 300, 400 pages.
Oh, okay.
So not crazy,
not
long.
Huge.
No. But it does, it was kind of hard to get through the book.
Interesting.
Because you're fighting this character of Cheryl Strayed, and you're just annoyed with her, but you do want to see how her journey goes, and you want her to win. And so you finish the book, but it wasn't like a page turner necessarily.
Well, that's fascinating, knowing that now, especially for somebody who's going to adapt something now. Again, I'm just going off of what you said. I haven't read the book. I can't say that I've read many of Oprah's selections. but knowing that, to you, according to you, like, if the character is unlikable, how do you transform that into a movie? Because people may put up with that in a book, you know, because people know they're going to sit down for however long it takes to read. You know, everybody's pace is different, but it's more of an effort than sitting down, and watching a movie. You just sit and watch, but people aren't going to sit through a movie where the character just turns them off completely. And how you turn that around and at least make her, you understand, and you become somewhat sympathetic. And once you realize that this is a relationship movie with her mom, not necessarily the husband, which I have a question because you read the book. I didn't hate her character in the movie. You know, that's why I like how it was told.
Yeah.
To see what brought her to the path.
Thing about the book, that the reason why so many people like the book and the reason why you are able to get through the book is the comedy, and she never pities herself. And I think that's a big part of her character, is that she sort of always has this, like, you know, kind of like the way some comics are, where they just kind of like laugh about themselves.
Self-effacing.
Yeah. No. And so that's why the book, I think, is so great, and why they, you know, decide to make a movie about it, is because it has this strong female, well-rounded character who, you know, is a sexual being, but neither, like, you never really think of her as, like, slutty or, like, you know, she's never this total rape victim either. You know, she's a really, really well-rounded female character, and she's also, self-effacing, and it gets you through the hike with her, because you're like, I'd be, like, swearing at every step as well. Like,
sure.
Totally.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
I think going into the sympathy card and how, or not sympathy, but to develop some sort of bond with her, I think a key point in that was them changing up the dynamic of the mother-daughter relationship and not thrusting us directly into the catalyst that led to this walk, but rather letting us build up that relationship with her so we could find something to love about her and about her mother. So by the time when, like, tragedy actually hits, you bond with them. You understand why they like each other. Instead of starting right there with, like, this was the worst day of my life that causes this downward spiral, where you're kind of like, they built up the emotion so you felt it more. It wasn't just like, because in film, we do often encounter tragedies, and a lot of them are surrounded by losing people, losing family members. But the key to them is showing that they're important. And then this one, because everyone knows that if you lose a parent or something, it's devastating. But how this one was so devastating for her that it cost her to become a heroin addict and a nymphomaniac. If you thrust an audience directly into that, it's hard to find the pity or the understanding.
Yeah. The book starts with her shooting heroin in her ankle. Mm-hmm. Like, that's in the beginning of the book.
Right.
And that was part of when I heard Reese Witherspoon was cast, because I had already read the book. I was like, are they going to have her shoot heroin in her ankle? Because it was such an image that they used in the book, because she was such an addict, she couldn't shoot it anywhere else, mm-hmm, because everywhere basically had been used up, which is why she shoots it in her ankle. And, like, that was enough for me to be like, I don't know if I will believe her doing that, but I'm really impressed. And honestly, the only thing that was weird for me about Reese playing this character was that Laura Dern's her mother, and in real life, I know they're like nine years apart.
Yeah.
Which is, I was like, okay. But, I mean, Reese is lucky, and she looks like she could be playing this 26, 27-year-old, even though she's 20 years older than that, and which I think is great because...
I just liked how you said, she has youth on her side.
Yeah.
Even after all these years, I mean, she could be in, what was the real big movie that made her big? That romantic comedy.
Cruel Intentions?
Not Cruel Intentions.
Legally Blonde.
Yeah. I mean, she has retained a lot of that youthful charm that she's had. And I think in this movie, you don't want to look at 9 years apart. She looked... I bought the relationship.
Yeah, and it was impressive because it's hard when you think about all the flashbacks that they did. You needed an actress who was strong enough to play this strong woman, mm-hmm, but also who could be in the flashbacks as her younger self. And I know how Sarah feels. So, well, I want you to get into that. But it was just, it's interesting to think about who else could have been cast in this, because I'm not sure many other actresses could have been. And then what do you have to say, Sarah?
I mean... For me, I have to disagree. I think that I really loved Reese Witherspoon's performance, especially on Hiking Trail or with her husband or with her lovers, and all that I really believed. I did have a problem with her and Laura Dern. I got pulled out. And I think that in their own right, they each did a very good job. But every single time, I just didn't really believe that Reese was her daughter. I saw them as peers, and maybe it was because they did have, not only, a parental relationship, but Reese would sometimes step up and, kind of put a harsh reality spin towards her mother. But it did. It pulled me out constantly. I thought that she just... there are points where I almost felt like she was, trying to play young. She was trying to play her younger self, or she was... There was just too much going on, and I hate to say it because I think Laura Dern had such a strong performance, but it hurt the movie for me.
Yeah, no, it was, the actual Cheryl Strayed was asked, does that bother you? And she goes, well, my mom was, she goes, there isn't nine, my mom didn't have me when I was nine, but she was very young when she had me, and, she goes, and the way they work off each other. And I think, too, as far as acting goes, number one, Laura Dern to me, remind me very much of Patricia Arquette's performance in Boyhood. It had that kind of realism to it. She was there was a sweetness, there was a charm, but yet you knew that there were times, even though she played it off like life wasn't affecting her, like the scene with, how can you be so happy all the time? Mom, we've got nothing. And she goes, and she turns to her, she goes, I'm very aware of what we have or don't have. And it was a great scene. And Laura Dern, I felt, it just played it to T, to point. She was fantastic. And I was never taken out of... I never thought for a minute going, there's no freaking way she can be... She's... I could say there's no way that she's Reese Witherspoon's mom.
Right.
There is a way that I can say she is Cheryl Strayed's mom.
Exactly. That I believe. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think their acting, yes, was strong. It was together as scene partners where I wanted to just have the camera angle, on Laura Dern, because their relationship... just didn't... It pulled me out.
Instantly. Let's talk about Laura, because I think that she had the breakout performance in this film. I mean, I know Reese... It's like, I've been a Reese Witherspoon fan for a while, so I knew this was coming. I knew, her... She'll be in a better film again. I was like, it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen. And so I was excited about this, but Laura stole it for me. I mean, the way she played such a happy-go-lucky character who is also dealing with cancer and dying and raising these two kids. I just thought it was incredible. Mm-hmm. And that is a hard role to play. And yeah, that moment you talked about was one of my favorite moments of the film when she turns to look at her. She turns to the camera and she's like, "You don't think I know?" Like, I know. I'm very aware.
I'm very aware.
And it was just incredible. And I really think that, you know, she kind of brought the life to the film. She made the film what it is. And I read a little article about how Laura said that, you know, as an actor, you feel like when you go to watch the film after you've made it, you know, all these things are going to be cut and your role might not even be left in it. It might be cut at the cutting room floor. And I guess she goes in and Jean-Marc, the director, said he used everything from her. And
he even shot stuff like she would be on set in the wilderness and he's like, oh, wait, that's a great, stay there, I gotta shoot this. Mm-hmm. And so he would shoot her on a path. And he's like, I don't know if we'll use it, but again, I think this movie also, and we'll get into technique and craft, I guess, later on, but I think this is a great case for one of the pros of digital filmmaking as opposed to, you know, using film. I mean, he, as a director, he apparently took a lot of shots that on film would have so upped the budget if he did every shot that he wanted to take and which he took. So, and again, there was, like, he saw Laura Dern by a tree. He's like, wait, I want to shoot this. He goes, I don't know if I'll use it, but I got to shoot you. And so it was a very interesting way of making film, but it's the digital age. And what, you know, you can do and what you couldn't do, or if you did, like, you wouldn't shoot so many feet of film.
Right.
You know.
But let's stay on the characters for the characters and the actors before we go into the technical parts of it. But you wanted to know about the husband character.
Yeah, I wanted to.
Because this is an interesting character in the film.
Yeah, I wanted to know about the husband character because, again, from the movie, you don't realize until, like, later on that it's a relationship movie, but you think it's with her, it could be the husband, but it ends up being the love of her life, as she says, is her mom. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes that. But now the husband, in the movie, it was interesting because I was trying to figure out who got rid of who. Because, like, the husband, to me, for what time he had in the film, I was like, well, this guy seems to be a loving, caring, responsible guy who cares about her. And wow, that scene in the car, it was really interesting how they did it too, because they flash back to that scene in the car very quickly, sort of early on.
A few times.
But they did it in a way where it looked like he was yelling at her, and it made him look like he was almost abusive. But then you find out what that argument is really about, and you're like,
you're on his side.
Yeah,
then.
You're going, oh, okay, he's yelling at her, and wow, and I didn't see that coming, and she deserves it. And I was like, all right, that's a clever play. So it actually seems that this guy's a nice guy, and she's actually dicking him over, and she's not nice to him.
It's exactly how it is in the book, and that's one of the reasons why she goes on this trail, is because she's leaving someone who is great. And that was that's something that's really interesting about this story, is that there's nothing wrong with him. Mm-hmm. And it's all what's wrong with her. And that, like, I love the line when he's like, I'm sorry you have to walk 1,000 miles too. And she's like, finish that sentence. And he just doesn't. And it's like, and it really is. It's like that she realizes there is nothing wrong with him in that, but she still wasn't happy in what she had. And so it's all something that's wrong with her.
Yeah, and I wish, I guess, from a movie perspective, that maybe there was a little bit more credit given to the relationship. Because, again, it leads you for a little while to believe that she was leaving maybe an abusive relationship.
Oh, interesting. I never got that, but I wonder if it's because I already knew the relationship. Right. Did you get that, Sarah, that he seemed abusive from those flashbacks?
I mean, I think that you're led to question what it is, and I know that there are hints, because they play with you. They don't want to let you completely into her psyche until you really lose her mom. So for me, it was like, what's going on? You have this, there's confusion with her husband, there's confusion with drugs, there's confusion with her brother, all these avenues that could, one of these could be the breaking point. You just don't know what one is. So, yeah, I'm sure there were points in my mind where it did flash into what has the husband done or what has happened in this relationship, but it was never on his part. It was just me trying to figure it out.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was just a way of them playing with the flashbacks, playing with the scenes for me to kind of try and puzzle it together before you reach the conclusion that actually what the heart of this is her love for her mother.
Right. And there was the scene at the beach, too. And again, there's a scene at the beach and she's like, I wrote your name in the sand, as I've always done since we were together, and this is my last time. And there seemed to have been, like, I'm over you. And I was like, huh, like, I was trying to figure out, when you're saying I'm over you in such a way, it's like, yeah, I'm done, like, with you. And for me, it was, like, again, until I figured out, like, hey, he didn't seem like he was that bad of a guy. He seemed to be really sticking up. And anybody who rescues somebody from that and says, like, what, you know, and obviously this had been an ongoing thing, that this wasn't the first time he saved her from like a crack house or something. So, I was like, he doesn't seem like that bad of a guy. What's going on here? And
I think the reason why they have that part in the film at the beach and she says, I'm ready to move on, is because as you saw throughout the film, she calls him, she writes his address down. Like, he's really the only part of her left alive because, like she said, like, call my brother. Like, I doubt if he cares. He's one of the only people. She has one other friend. Hmm. And that was sort of it in her life. And so I think that that's why she's like, okay, I am ready to move on. I'm ready for the next step in my life. And it's because, and I think it's just because she's like, okay, I'm ready to let him go and, like, for himself as well. Because I think part of it is she's holding on to him a little bit. And he's, you know, still there with her. Like, they obviously still loved each other, even when they were getting their divorce tattoos. Like, he still cares for her very much. And I think that's sort of, like, the audience's way of being like, okay, it's okay. Like he needs to let her go, too. Mm-hmm. And you see it, I think, in that part.
Yeah.
I also thought it was just very interesting because it was such a comment on her as a sexual being. Because right in part of that scene was she was being watched.
Mm-hmm.
By a man who she had just slept with.
What?
And, like, you can see his perspective out the window and how independent and, like, focused on her own self she was in a way. Because it wasn't like, ooh, look who I just found, this really sweet, caring guy. She never looks at him either. Yeah, there's no goodbye. There's no look back. It was purely looking forward and being able to say goodbye to another male at the exact time we're watching this other guy kind of visually say goodbye to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked that play on that scene about where she was emotionally.
Yeah.
And where her mind was and where her heart is throughout the film. And I thought that was... They could have easily kept him out of it. They could have easily just made that about her and Paul. But it's really about all the sections of her life intertwining and about this journey on the trail paralleling, like, her emotional life, her real life outside of the Pacific Coast. So.
Yeah.
Safe to say that, though, that her husband is has somewhat moved on since he's cooking dinner with another female at that point.
But still taking the phone call, still going out, still writing her letters, still being proud of her. Yeah.
I mean, their relationship is something... It's great that we can talk about it so much because there was so much there and even the short scenes we got between the two of them because they really... were able to show that their love was complicated.
Mm-hmm.
That,
and, to say the least.
Yeah, and the actor, by the way, is Thomas Sadowski, who played Paul, the husband, and I thought he did such a good job.
Yeah, but it goes back to, like, they cared about each other at the divorce. He would save her. He wants to take the phone call, but he wants to be able to move on, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the struggles that they're facing, that maybe there does come... a point where, you know, you've just been through a little too much, and for the safety of yourself and to be able to move on, you need to move on from each other.
Mm-hmm. And they got together very young. In the book, they talk about, like, getting married while in college. So, yeah, you're like, it's, and you kind of, like, let themselves go. And obviously the story is about her growing and, like, growing up as well as, you know, growing through all these things that she has to go through. Another interesting casting thing, which I really love, is that young Cheryl Strayed is played by the real Cheryl Strayed's daughter, Bobby, named after her grandmother. And really interesting articles were written, like how Laura Dern was saying how it was just so great to be able to sort of give this daughter, like, moments with her grandmother, like, with Laura, which I thought was really interesting. And I just thought that was a really fun, cool thing that they did. But they also left out, Cheryl Strayed in the book and in real life, I guess, has a sister. And they left out the sister character completely and just had her have a brother, which I was fine with. Because the brother-sister character in the book is similar.
Right.
You know, they're, so just keep having one, I thought, was fine and easy, and it didn't really bother me that much.
Yeah, and they spent so little time on the brother anyways to throw in another character at that point. You know, you gotta, from cinematic purposes, I get, you gotta whittle down, and one character can do it.
And... Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. I think that
especially because their characters are, the whole point is that they're not in her life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just having one is like fine.
To say they're both not there. Yeah, I think that was very strong. Also, you mentioned Cheryl Strayed's daughter, and I think that just kind of hones into Cheryl's involvement in this film, where not only was her actual daughter cast, but she was also there, seemed to be very present. Very willing to share this story. I think she was even the one who sent her book to Reese Witherspoon, or at least so I've heard from the featurette. Like, and then Reese read it like on a plane and loved it less than halfway through. So there was a bond, and she does. I mean, if you watch the behind the scenes clips, she's there, she's present, she looks strong and healthy, and you could tell. I thought that was very wonderful that they did include her and included her family in the making of this, because it was really to honor and spread her story.
Yeah, writers of books have are starting to become more relevant on set than they ever used to be.
Yep.
Well, and this book gets compared a lot to Into the Wild, and he's not alive.
Right.
To be, you know, a part of it. And so I think it's great. Yeah, I think it's great when they, you know, it's this lady's story. She wrote her own story. Mm-hmm. And it's not like she wrote someone else's story and the director's telling, you know, a fictional story.
Right.
Like, when it's about their story, I feel like you want them to be on set if they can be, you know, because it's rare that they can be and, like, help to guide a little bit. I think it's great. And I also think it's great because, which I think we should start getting into now, which is the directing, the writing, and the editing. They took liberties with the way that they were going to tell the story.
Yeah.
And I thought it was helpful. And I'm glad to know that, you know, if Cheryl was very involved, that she sort of, like, let them.
Gave the okay.
You know?
Yeah, which is fantastic in the way that, again, it's becoming more common that they're allowing authors. And I think this was set up. J.K. Rowling was so highly protective of her Harry Potter, rightfully so, that Warner Brothers really relied on her and allowed her more leeway than other authors had been given when they adapt a book. So, you know, and then, you know, we talk about Hunger Games and the woman who wrote Divergent and other adaptations that we've talked about. Authors have been more involved than usual, but again, when it comes to the editing, you know, you stay out, and the adaptation of the screenplay, I think they did a really good job. And putting that together, because again, you're time shifting a lot. You're flash back, like there were no flash forwards, but the times in which you were flashing back to, it was like pieces of a puzzle, and it all came together by the end. Because there would be scenes of, you know, the little, you know, girl Strayed running through the pharmacy with the pack and whatever. And you're like, what the hell is, like, what's this? And then we'd cut to home. Then we'd cut to husband. Then we'd cut to diner. Mm-hmm. So there was no linearness or there was no linear arc of how those flashbacks worked. And it could have been all confusing, but it came together quite well, and that all came from the editing and from the screenplay. And I think that's why I said craft and technique of this film were fantastic. They really worked well together. And Nick Hornby's screenplay, obviously, I thought it was a strong screenplay. And after listening to you, that's a major undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
To turn a character that you don't like necessarily into somebody that you can sympathize, and you do it via flashback. And then when you're going to shoot so much, and LaVallee is so a part of the editing, it almost sounds like he has more fun editing and putting together his movie than he does directing. That to me is
he
great.
Just is a really interesting director because, yeah, he does obviously spend a lot of time in the editing room, but also he's coming off of two Oscar-winning performances. Mm-hmm. So obviously he's an actor's director. You know, obviously he can get things out of people, and he got something out of both, out of Reese Witherspoon, who, you know, I think it's been 9 years since Walk the Line.
It's been a little while.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while, and so he was able to bring something out of her that we haven't seen in a long time. Laura Dern did a fantastic job. And so, yeah, he's one of these directors, you know, that can really bring things out of actors as well as get in the editing room and really work a film.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, talking about his choices, and we can even talk about Dallas Buyers Club, one of the things he keeps is there's a naturalism, there's a flow, and that comes from his choices, whether it's not, I know, not only in this movie, but also in Dallas Buyers Club, there's a lot of focus on natural light or on handheld digitals, and he would give the actors the opportunity where he would shoot almost continuously from different angles, so they weren't losing the moment, and that was partially because of the lighting, and they wanted to keep everything going, so they would just keep it rolling, go for 15 minutes, and get every angle they could, and just pack it in there, and that keeps, you know, it's not, you're not calling cut on an actor, you're just letting them in this journey where she can just travel, and they kind of move around her with the light in the atmosphere. It's real, and I think that helps her, or probably helps the actors really be a part of it. And
I loved the use of natural light in this film, because as she went through along the trail, obviously the light changes, you know, whether she's in the desert or in the mountains, or it's very evergreen around her, and it felt like you were also going on this journey, you know, the light would change a little bit, and, like,
right,
the scenery, and it was just nice. It was nice that they weren't trying to keep the light so continuous the same, it, you know, throughout the whole film. It was nice to be able to visually go on the journey as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, the way LaValle shot this is, even at the beginning, he didn't know quite the rhythm that he was going to get. And again, I think, through, you know, one of the benefits of shooting digitally, he even said, Reese, he goes, you got to be patient with me. I'm going to shoot you in four different ways. And I'm going to get, he goes, I'm not exactly sure what I want. He goes, but well, I'm going to shoot you from, like, I'm going to have the handheld. I'm going to have you walking towards me. Then I'm going to shoot you from over here. Then I'm going to shoot from the left side, then the right side. Then I'm going to do a POV and whatever. And then it wasn't until he was able to get into the editing room.
Wow.
And figure out, oh, okay, this is what I want to do. And then couple that with he wanted long shots so that he can get Reese's spec, and he wanted to show the nature, which there were some beautiful shots, and then working with,
and even funny
light,
long shots, I think, you know, where it's her tent in the desert and she's totally by herself, like some of those beautiful big shots were actually comical as well.
You're talking about when she turns the light on.
Yeah.
And then what pops up into focus is the rabbit, like, yes, the jackrabbit, which was, you know, it was so, yeah, and he filmed nature in, a naturalistic way. But again, I think that they would start before sun up, and they would shoot until sundown, and they were saying, you know, we tried to get as much as we could within a day. And so we're basically out there hiking along and just, we're capturing the day as best possible that we can. And they used very little lighting effect, only on an interior where they may need something, or they would light some candles and do whatever. And again, it was the same effect that he did in Dallas Buyers Club. Maybe it wasn't as gritty as Dallas, because that was
obviously,
like, Mexico,
yeah.
But this was, you know, it looked fantastic from where we were, you know.
And then speaking about his editing, because so much is on that, I felt like we talked a little about this, like, the memories, drawing back how he would do these quick cuts throughout, and whether it was you got a whole scene or a splice or a chunk, there was so much that would either pop out at you, or he would also do the option of association, which to me was really strong in this film.
Right.
I really enjoyed the switching from the song on a song on the trail to what that song brought back in her memories, or a feeling, or anything. It was just that, for me, that felt so real because that's how I remember things. It is coming across that association and reflecting back. And to me, it tied in flawlessly. Or, like, there was certain ones where she'd be reading a book and you'd pull into the book and then pan out and we were in a classroom. And it was bringing you back to these moments where she felt happy or where she felt sad, and they were strong for her. And I thought that was done smoothly and really well. And then also added in a little bit of spice with, like, Lord, I'm walking through the forest. Mm-hmm. And that kind of being a little creepy, but also wonderful. So I thought that the pace of everything he added was really strong.
Yeah, and music is a whole other ball of wax regards to this film. But, like, still, like, you know, I mean, still going with the cinematography. I mean, Yves Bellanger, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, he was the cinematographer. And he goes on, number one, they shot this in 35 days.
Which is incredible.
And Dallas Buyers Club was 23. So for them, this was a walk in the park. It's like, wow, we have more time to film this movie.
Well, they don't have two starving actors, which I think helps.
and they approached it too, like filming Easy Rider. Like they said, you know, we wanted to approach this like filming old school movies that we're influenced by, which is fantastic. And yeah, I think it looked great. And when you edit it together, like I didn't. There was only one scene where I felt that there were almost there was a scene where she was swimming through the river. She has to cross this river.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so she goes to cross this river, and we see her, and there's mild rapids, but if you're going to walk it, right, that's not going to be easy to get this pack on. So she gets across, and then they have a photograph of her coming out. And the river that was, and her coming out was like a little, like it was almost, it didn't look as raging as it was when she was walking through. And I think
that's the point though, is that for her, she was like, oh, I could walk through this. And then she's in the river and she's like, oh, this is a bad idea.
And then it's not as big of a hurdle as you thought it was.
Right. But that also lends back to when you read the book, you're like, you're an idiot, you don't know anything about what you're doing, you didn't study. Like when she meets the character Greg and he's like, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter how much training you did, it doesn't prepare you for when you're out here. And you're like, oh, she didn't do any training because she didn't realize that she was hiking mountains when you hike the Pacific Crest Trail. Like, it is, you are up in the mountains. Like, it's just, and she has the wrong boots. She packs her pack so big. Like, that in the book is all very, very drawn out. So that's why she's a little unlikable, because you're like, you are so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, other, like, that river part, I felt, was like, oh, yeah, here's another moment where they're showing where she's dumb. Like,
yeah.
Because she's trying to cross a river with a pack that weighs probably a 3/4 of her body weight. So if you shift your weight in the wrong way, you're going to drown in the river.
Well, I love that scene where she comes across like the first campsite. And there's that guy who's like, no, I'm not a hiker. He goes, but I like to talk to everybody. And, I cook. And he's like, yeah, you look like you need a little help.
Yeah.
He goes, let me help you with
some
that pot.
Pruning.
Some pruning. And I thought that was a great scene, too. And I think for this journey, for the most part, you liked most of the people that she bumped into. There were a couple of wild cards, those two hunters.
Yep, also in the book. Like, that part was in the book, and that was real. And I was wondering how they were going to do it in the film, and I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, so there was the gentleman who...
Licorice?
The
older man, yeah. No, I love how, I mean, as a woman, I really loved how they played how every male character before was a threat. Because she's a woman walking by herself on the Pacific Crest Trail. And at the time, the Pacific Crest Trail had just, because this takes place in 95, the Pacific Crest Trail had opened recently. It's not like the Appalachian Trail where it's a very seasoned trail. It's very, you know, like there's obviously, it's obvious where you're hiking.
Yeah.
Not in the Pacific Crest and not at that time. It was a relatively new trail and she's a woman by herself hiking this. I really liked the way that they did it, that, you know, everyone was a threat and it was a little nerve-wracking until she was able to sort of figure them out. And I really liked that aspect.
There was a great balance of fear and comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Constant fear and comedy with each scene, from the man with the licorice after he's exposed it, like he has a gun. And every time he reaches anywhere near her, she's flinching and you're flinching. To the hunters, to the hobo conversation.
Yeah.
Like each time, like, there is an element of fear, but there also was a little bit of comedy, except for the hunters who were just very creepy.
The licorice guy and the pickup truck guy. Well, my first thought was, what the hell are you doing in his glove compartment? Get the that's none of your business. What the fuck? What are you doing in there?
Being curious. Like, I would have done the exact same thing. Yeah. She's sitting in a truck for who knows how long. Like, well,
she
what's
opted
in
to
here?
Do that. I mean, that's that guy's thing, but I liked how it played out because, well, it's the guy's property. Hey, you're an invited guest. I just thought that it was funny that because it's set up, once you put a gun into a scene, there is that foreboding of danger that's going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And he all of a sudden gets painted as, oh, he's a maybe this hick farmer guy. I don't know what the hell's going on. But once they start talking and he says his wife, and then once she's in the house, like those two characters were great. And I really enjoyed the conversation where, you know, he's like, yeah, when he's driving her back to the trail and he's like, do you ever think of quitting? She's like, yeah, every 2 minutes. She goes, how about you? And he goes, oh, I quit. Everything. He goes, there's never been a fork in the road in my life. He's like, so it's just an interesting dichotomy there, but yet very nice people. And then the people at the campsite and Greg, all these people willing to help, which was, you know, that was actually sort of kind of nice. It wasn't, I was hoping that it wasn't going to be all adversity.
Right.
And she didn't have to fight a bear.
No. Right. Surprising. Another reason why you're like, why do you have a knife? Like, come on, Cheryl. Just like little things like that. You're like, you were so dumb.
She had a saw.
Which she, I know, she gets rid of. She prunes it out. But yeah, let's talk about the soundtrack now.
Sure.
Because they didn't have a soundtrack. They just used, you know, music playing on the radio or flashback music or, you know, Laura Dern singing, little things like that to make the music, which I think is interesting. And we're seeing as a trend in film now, them kind of stepping away from the soundtrack. This isn't the first film this year to not have a soundtrack. It's probably the third or fourth, I think. And it's interesting, and it's, I like the way that they did it, and I think it's a ballsy move for a film about walking 1,000 miles. You would think that they would use the music to help you get through this trek.
Right.
And they didn't, and I thought that was really, really cool, and, I liked the way that they did it, and I didn't miss the soundtrack. How did you guys feel about that?
I agree completely. I thought that their use of music when it was there was so present. And like it really pulled me into her life, and I thought that the singing, and especially when she was singing alone, like walking through the snow, to me just really resonated, because what else are you going to do except for live in your memories, and so much of that for her seemed to be associated with song.
Yeah.
And I kind of recognized her as that person because it was so often a trigger for her. So when we did hear like the singing alone, it wasn't even that it was beautiful for me to hear, but I could like wonder what she was now thinking mm-hmm. about, because to me that's what it became a reference to. It just became a reference for her really sinking into memory. And so when her thoughts were wandering, you got these silence, you got voiceovers of like breathing or, you know, her desperate thoughts. And then when we would get into a song, it was because she was kind of accomplishing what she was setting out to do, which was living in memory, experiencing change, and like reflecting on her life.
Yeah.
So I was glad that we didn't get music the whole time, because that's...
It was serving a purpose.
Yes.
I think that's really interesting, like, because we weren't oversaturated with music, that when music did come, it was very important.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting point.
And Jean-Marc Vallée, he says he doesn't want to hire composers.
Huh.
And so he used music supervisor Susan Jacobs, who we talked about in American Hustle, because she was the music supervisor in that. And in that movie, music was extremely integral in the pacing, the plotting of the film. And in this movie, too, you had touched on it not too long ago, is that the music was meant as a tether. And I think that music means a lot to my life, almost as much as movies. And as you brought up too, music is a great tether. And I think I don't think I'm unique in this. I think everybody has various songs within their life that they can shoot back to. Like if you hear a certain song, it makes you think of a time that you did this, or a time that I saw this movie. And everybody understands that. And the way that the music was used in this, an audience gets, okay, I understand what's going on. And they would even like use different versions of songs, which I enjoyed too. And they even did a song in which they changed the lyrics, like because Reese Witherspoon sang the song. And yeah, I think music is as integral to this movie as the editing was, mm-hmm. Because it really does ground the character and makes her, again, I think it makes her a little bit more identifiable and relatable to a movie audience.
Yeah, I think you realize what, you get more specific in what type of person this character is. Like, okay, this is a person who would get a tattoo like that with a horse on it. Okay, this is a person who kind of likes this music, who kind of wants to live in Portland after this and is walking through like a Grateful Dead thing. Like, you learn so much about her through it. And it just helps to make a more fully formed character that you're like, oh, I totally know someone like that. Or mm-hmm. that's totally like me. Or, yeah, I think it was just used really well. And, yeah, with the editing, it was such a good storytelling element.
Mm-hmm. There was a great technique.
I mean, this movie also displayed evolution of self very mm-hmm. consistently. And whereas I just mentioned, and you both have mentioned, the association of music, I also think, as we got towards the end, when we had, like, the little boy join in for the song, it was it was a new chapter of music. And, like, for me, that could be a point that now she would remember. Like
that was a big moment for me in that movie.
Like, that is...
Did that happen in the book?
I don't remember. I don't remember that part specifically, but when I watched the film, I mean, I was crying during that part. Yeah. It was really beautiful. I don't remember... if that happened.
Because to me, that I'll be... Yeah, it was a nice scene. It seemed a little bit like, okay, this just popped up out of nowhere. Like, this kid singing an entire song, and like,
yeah,
I'm
I
like,
don't remember. I read the book a few years ago.
So that's why I was wondering if it was in the book.
I read it a few years ago, so I don't really remember that part so much. But yeah, like, I mean, the thing is, though, the rest of the movie was in the book. Like, mm-hmm, when mm-hmm. she walks through that Grateful Dead thing, when her friend does send her really cute bra and underwear, like, that's in the book. Like, her friend ends up sending it to her at that location because she's like, I want you to feel pretty. Like, and so I was glad that they, you know, threw mm-hmm. all that stuff in. And even the condom joke is in the book. Like, that, all that
stuff.
That's
a girl hiking me 12 condoms.
Yeah, like, all that stuff is in the book. And so... Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if the little boy and the llama was in the book, because I just don't remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was that was a beautiful moment. Yeah. And that, I mean, talk about the cinematography at that point. It was so gorgeous mm-hmm. being in the woods there, and it just all the brown and dark green. It was absolutely stunning. And
a llama. I was like,
oh my God, so
the
cool.
What the hell is a llama? Like, what? Is she dreaming this?
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell is a llama doing?
Yeah.
You know, in this, it was like, okay, she just found a llama. I was like, is she going to ride it? Like, what is going
that
on?
That went through
here?
My head, too. I was like, oh, I wonder if she'll ride it some other way.
Yeah. And then you hear, oh, hey, thanks for catching them. I'm like, who has a llama?
Actually, I do know people who have llamas.
All right, that's fantastic.
Multiple people I do know have llamas, but
multiple people.
Yeah. They're easy pets,
and
cheaper than
fit?
A horse.
Okay,
so but you can't live in a city, obviously.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed that part.
And I liked using Simon and Garfunkel's El Condor Paso, which we opened up with, because thematically, if I could. Like, that's the thing of this, you know, if I could. Like, I could quit at any time, mm-hmm. you know, or if I could just continue, you know, go on a couple of miles, or if I keep at this pace, mm-hmm. you know, I'll be done in 22 years, which yeah. was, you know, that was funny, too.
They didn't stress it as much, but she does get better as a hiker. You know, she does end up doing 20 miles a day.
I think you do feel that, though. I think that's part
okay.
of the play. That was, for me, part of the play with visually presenting the numbers on the screen,
mm-hmm.
Where they would say, like, day 5, mile 5,
yeah.
mile 80. And when they were bringing that up, they did give you enough time to kind of develop and understand that she was getting quicker. She was catching up faster. She was doing more miles per day. Like, because your pace, you realize, because she says it's supposed to take about 3 months. And you know that at the beginning, if she'd continued, that was completely unrealistic.
Oh,
with
yeah.
the 20-mile lines. But then, as you get closer...
That's when in the book, when you're like, you're an idiot. 5 miles?
But you realize she's catching up. You
right.
realize, like, she's not going to make it perfect, but she's getting faster.
She even
she's
looked...
stronger.
I mean, maybe it was just me. I mean, she even looked more fit at the end of the movie than when she first got on the trail. She looked a little leaner, you know, and... Of course, a lot of that's by eating cold mash and whatever. You know, and that was funny, too. It was like, she got the wrong type of propane for the stove. And you know,
all adding to that. to that those thoughts. But yeah, they did it in a way in the film where you didn't, you know, you weren't so annoyed by her. You just kind of were like, oh, eh. But you didn't really feel bad because she was like, I'm an idiot. You know, she, like, was announcing it, too.
Yeah.
Which is always kind of nice.
And she's pushing through it. And, like, she goes and she corrects and she gets the right guess. And then she's and she's happy that she succeeded.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't so self-pity, this is the end of the world. Like, I'm unprepared. It was like, well, that's a problem. I now have nothing to eat.
Yeah. And one of the another storytelling element that I really enjoyed in the film before we, because I want to move on and get into box office and stuff and actually how it's doing. But I loved in the flashback sequence. And then when she meets the three young guys and they're like, how are you doing this by yourself? And they're not the first ones to ask her how she's doing it by herself. And it's like, you know, this purpose, this trail served its purpose for her in that she was constantly with her thoughts and her memories and her troubles, and she walked through them. And she could have quit at any time, which is also a theme that's going through her head, but she doesn't. She makes it through to the Bridge of Gods, which is such a great bridge to end on. And yeah, and I just thought it was really, really well done that they did the flashbacks the way they did, because those were her thoughts the whole time. You never saw her bored on the trail. You never saw her, you know, just staring away. You know, you saw her in pain and you saw her, you know, like not happy with herself. But she was always busy with her thoughts or with her books and her quotes. And I thought that was really great. And I loved that they did the flashbacks like that. I really did. I thought that was such a great element.
Yeah, it was a great technique. And one of my other favorite scenes, a little more lighthearted, is when she's walking through the snow and she's looking around and all of a sudden you hear a whoosh of a snowboard going by and you're like, what the heck? And she's
I loved all those moments that non-hikers were in, you know, like, because she is, like, on different parts of a trail that goes through mountains and goes through different states, and there's different things happening.
It was just a great, like, where am I? They're like, you're in California. Like, are you lost? And she's like, no.
Just screwed. Yeah.
And, you know, she was in Mammoth, and it was like, oh, okay. But that was a great scene, the way that it was set up. The scene, was that a fox?
I was going to just bring up. I was going to wonder how you guys felt about the fox. I think it's shown three times. To me, three main times. You get the initial presentation of the fox, where it's just in the snow and its natural environment.
Right.
Then it comes back when she's throwing her boots off.
Right.
And then at the very end, we get it at the bridge. And I remember the fox because it's in the, I believe actually also in the trailer.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And so I knew it was coming.
It was in the trailer, yep.
And for me, it was just something that was there but was never fully addressed. And I think that there was constant images we got. We got mile markers. We got quotes. We got flashbacks that pieced together. And for me, the fox didn't really come full circle. It just entered in a critical moment of her journey, but one where she'd already become kind of an established hiker. And then it said goodbye at the end. So I was like, is it supposed to be a reference to her mother? Is it supposed to be a reference to herself? I don't know what I was really gaining from it, and I was wondering what you guys felt about the fox.
Well, I like that it was a unique fox, if it, in fact, is a fox. I'm not sure what... It looked like a unique type of animal, perhaps endangered. Again, I'm not one with nature. I'm one with making a hotel reservation, so... It didn't look like a typical fox that we've seen. It looked like a unique kind of fox, and when she first sees it in the woods, and she's like, oh my god, that there's another being out here that maybe, you know, I have a little companion. And then I think it almost just became her spirit guide, her, like, Indian spirit guide to help, like, he was there, or the fox was there, or whatever it is, at those key, you know, because, let's face it, she's in the snow, it's all desolate, she sees the fox, the next time you're right, when the opening of the movie is basically, you know, when she's throwing off her boots, she sees the fox again, and that's a turning point. You know, that's when she, like, really lets out her anger and screams and is like, you know, what am I, fuck you, bitch. And she throws her other shoe. So that's a turning point. And then at the end, obviously, she's sort of come full circle. I had to extrapolate that. Like, there was.
Yeah, I think you just kind of, they make you infer with the fox. And I sort of was with you, like, mother spirit animal yeah. representative.
Was it in the book?
I guess we're...
Foxy. I don't remember. I don't remember if it was like a hallucination or if what. But I think what's interesting, though, is that every animal to me in the movie really stood out because she was very alone. So the rattlesnake is scary. The cows were happy. The fox was interesting. And like, it's every animal, not as like human or whatever, really stood out because she was just so alone. So I thought that that was interesting. Because even for me, like, having her interact with the animals, I was like, oh, good, someone else for her. Like, she's just been in her own thoughts yeah. for this whole trip.
Were there any other interactions? See, I was thinking of this while I was watching the movie. I was like, geez, she's not... I mean, there's the very possibility that she could get at out here. I mean, there could be wolves, coyotes. I mean, did she come across any adversity in the book with any... I mean,
With animals?
Well, yeah.
Not really. Just mostly the hunters is the scariest part. In the book, she does travel with Greg through the trail a little bit. And then they both decide. What was interesting is all the hikers, they sort of, anyone who she would walk with for a while, they all decide, you know, like, hey, I want to walk by myself. It was a really interesting thing to be like, yeah, people are on that trail for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they do like enjoy each other's company for like,
but they're not
it was always
meet
3 days at most. And then they would sort of separate.
Interesting.
So, yeah, but that whole Snapple thing, that wasn't product placement, that's in the book. Like, she's dying for a Snapple, like, and for chips. And they show her eating a burger, but every time she gets to a stop, she always eats a burger. Like, that's always what she wants, which I thought they did a really good job with, like, all the little things that the book describes, and they kept it in.
Any brand placement, it has to go to REI.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Who doesn't love REI after this?
Yeah, right. Well, you kind of hate them at first because she had the wrong boots. And you're like, I can't believe they would do that. But yeah, no, they help her out. How is the movie doing? So it's only in select theaters currently. Reese Witherspoon posted on Instagram that because of the hype for it, because it did premiere at Telluride. So it's been, the hype has been going on for a while. And then obviously she's a big name. She's a producer on it. How's it doing in the select box offices?
Fairly well. And it had a pretty much larger opening than your typical, like, your typical, like, slow release pack. Like, usually you just go New York, LA. And you're picking 4-6 theaters for an opening weekend. This one went 21 locations.
Wow.
Which it's wild compared to 4 and 6. We're still talking 21 locations. At last check, I saw that it was, it did about $600,000. So, you know, that's a location average of about $28,000, $29,000. So, you know, it's like you said, we were talking about this. There's a lot of heat because of Reese Witherspoon. It helps that the Golden Globes just came out.
Yes.
So we'll see. Number one, Fox Searchlight is rolling this out. And they have experience in rolling this kind of a movie out, like a Juno and Little Miss Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
So they have experience in riding a wave of buzz. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see whether audiences... Will it go out and grab the Oprah crowd? Because you said it was an Oprah Book of the Month.
Yes,
thing.
It was an Oprah Book Club.
I definitely think that's exactly who it's going to grab. The
I think
crowd,
so too.
Especially the focus being a woman. I think that bringing that adventure for... Yes. Yeah. Yes, 100%. It's Oprah's
and I think it's a good. I think it's a good movie. I agree with you. I don't think it's a Best Picture. But it's a great film, and it's interesting, and it's telling this woman's interesting story, mm-hmm. and it's a story we don't necessarily know. And so I think it's going to continue to do well. On Rotten Tomatoes, they have a 92% fresh, and then an audience score of 80%. So I think it's going to be one of those movies, that people will go see. I mean, it's got tough competition right now. There's a ton of amazing films out. But I do think Reese and Laura Dern especially should be getting those nominations. And, I think that, if it's not going to be like this huge blockbuster mm-hmm. film, I think it will do well and obviously make the money back that went into it. But if not more,
which is, and that to me is the other most interesting part, outside of finding how many days it took to film, which again, 30, that's like a little over a month.
That's like,
and you got to figure,
is that a true indie? If it, what's the true indie? They have to film it in how many days? I think it's under 90 or something, or not even. It's under a certain amount of days because what's his name? Who did American Hustle?
David O. Russell.
David O. Russell tries. Mm-hmm. He makes his films all a true indie because he films in that time frame.
Yeah, you know, 35 days. But I couldn't find a budget on this movie, at all.
Well, Reese is a producer, so she might have taken a cut. She might have, taken a pay cut taking the producer credit. You know.
Well, I think she picked the right role, and again, I opened up by saying I don't think Reese can be considered an A-lister today. And I think that's part of the reason why you're going 21 locations trying to generate this heat. But to her credit, you know, she had two options. Gone Girl is a movie that I believe she produced. She was supposed to be in. She was supposed to play the Rosamund Pike role. And she talked it out with David Fincher, and she said, you know what? Can't do it. She goes, that's not for me. She goes, I don't think I can pull it off for you. Yet she still highly respects David Fincher, and she talked very glowingly about him as a director and what she learned from him. But I think with Wild, again, I think everything just fell into place for her. I think at a time in her life when she is looking to resurrect her career and taking projects that not just to take them, to take this project where she's never done down and dirty. Like, she's never been like a heroin addict or a sex maniac or so everybody looks at her. You know, there was a time where she was considered America's sweetheart. I mean, with Legally Blonde.
Sweet Home Alabama.
Absolutely. Everybody loved her. So this is taking a role in which is way, it's a complete 180 than we've ever seen her. And number one, people like a transformation. Hollywood loves a transformation when they see you doing something different. So I think for her, picking Wild over Gone Girl was the absolute right choice. I don't really see her. Like, Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl nailed it.
Yeah. And again, I don't think I could see Reese being that scary person that you're afraid because you don't know what she's going to do next.
Right.
I think that was such an exciting part of Gone Girl. So, yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, obviously, Rosamund Pike was incredible, but I don't know necessarily if I would have. But actually, Election, which is one of Reese's very first films, she does play that, like, weird girl that you don't know what she's going to do next. But, I mean, that's been years.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously, I do agree. I think that Wild is an amazing choice for her.
Yeah, I think so. And it'll get her, you know, credit. And like we said, I think she'll more than likely get nominated for Best Actress. It'll just be, you know, it's interesting. And I think it's a good role for her. And if any case, by not going wide, you're saying, hey, this isn't a big commercial release. And by going the limited route, number one, it's going to, for the mass audiences, when this starts to roll out, it'll start to, in a sense, reintroduce audiences to Reese Witherspoon. They're going to go, Reese Witherspoon, oh, she's back in this movie. Oh, yeah, it's based off of an Oprah book. Oh, yeah, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, I read it. Oh,
and,
yeah,
and they do it in a way that sort of kind of buries the past. It buries the stinkers that she may have done because all the word will be is how phenomenal she is. So I think the movie will end up benefiting. And now we are coming into the final stretch. We're coming into vacation time and holiday season time. This isn't in a sense you can say it's a feel good movie by the end of the movie. It's not a downer, you know,
There's a lot of comedy.
There is comedy and, you know, it's a woman who does find herself. You know, she goes on Walkabout. Which was a movie that I'd thought about. And I thought about All Is Lost a lot as well. The Robert Redford movie. Because in a sense, they're very similar in the way that in All Is Lost, we never get the flashbacks. But we know that Robert Redford is going. We know the man, as he's credited, he's going on this sailing journey because of something bad that happened in his life. He's going out to search for himself and navigate these waters. And I felt I was making the parallel to this movie. Where here we have, but this is a true life woman who's trying to find herself and search through nature. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they made a good point in the film that is what it's about. And that's what all the hikers, and so any kind of adventure film lends itself to, they're out there for some reason. And, you know, you're hiking 1,000 miles for a reason. And we actually, later on, we'll be doing an interview with Catherine Duprune, who plays Stacy, who's the other female hiker that we meet. And they kind of talk about, like, yeah, I'm out here for a reason, too. And then when Reese meets the three guys, they're like, yeah, I have a few ex-girlfriends I don't want to think about. And, you know, they're going into those places in their mind and they're working those things out along the trail. And I think any sort of adventure film, even though this will be getting compared to a lot of them, this is different. You know, it's a woman's story and it's told in a really awesome, interesting way. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, they do a really good job of it. And yeah, any adventure film, they're all going to be about. These people are out there for a reason.
Yeah, and you
they're
know,
willing to be by themselves with their thoughts and their mind because they got stuff to work out.
You said you wanted to go on a hike after this. Are you, everything okay? Buck up, little camper.
I like hiking. I haven't hiked 1,000 miles, but I have hiked over 15 miles a day for multiple days in a row. So
yeah, it's
I
pretty.
I do understand that, and I understand the pain of walking through rivers.
Yeah.
And your feet hurt real bad.
So after this whole discussion, how do you guys feel about the film? Are you, you know, if you had to like rate it out of 100%, what are you guys kind of giving it?
I don't know if I can do percentage wise, but I can definitely say that I think the story is inspiring. And if it doesn't like make you want to get up and go read about the trail or walk the trail, I think it does make you at least want to take a little bit of alone time and really think about your memories and yourself. And
yeah. I saw the movie alone, so there was my alone time.
No, but I do. I think that it brings on self-reflection and also appreciation for the strength that people have within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Reese did a very good job. And I think that it was put together in a really cinematic way that was utilized flashbacks very, very mm-hmm. well. I think that's one of the biggest strengths of this movie is how they puzzled it together. And it was a journey not only to watch but to experience.
Absolutely.
So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, if I were going, you know, giving it a letter grade, it, for me it's a B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a solid B. It, you know, I mean, it like I said, I don't think it's best picture. I didn't walk out feeling, whew. You know, I did, you know, and again, I bought into, yes, Reese's performance was fantastic. I think Laura Dern's performance is fantastic in this as well. And it's really nice to see her. It was great to see her in this role. And, you know, and again, I just give the kudos to craft technique, the directing, the editing, the use of music, which is very clever. And again, I'll compare it to, because there was another movie that came out this year, a much more commercial film, just happened to watch again. And again, very clever use of music was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
It had an amazing use and very clever, unique way of using music to tether an audience with the only human character that's there. In the similar fashion, Wild uses music for an audience to empathize and to tether themselves to, now I forget her name.
Cheryl.
To Cheryl. I find it very ironic that her last name is Strayed.
She gave herself that last name.
Oh, that's for writing the book?
No, before, after her divorce, she changes her, she picks her last name and she picks Strayed on purpose.
That's funny.
Yeah.
She's strayed off the path. Or on the path. She strays a lot.
Or she's straight in life. Yeah, no, she's, no, that was a very, no, they touch on it a little bit in the film, like quickly, but no, she gave herself that last name, right after her divorce, before hitting the trail. And yeah, so it's, you know, it's totally great that she wrote a book called Wild.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think, it's like, I think the 80% audience review is right on. I totally agree. And I think it was a good film and everybody was great in it. The whole supporting cast as well, from the brother to the husband, you know, to all the different characters you meet along the trail. I thought they were all great. Everybody really set up this world around her really well. So I agree. I think that it's a solid B. It's a great movie and people should go see it. And it's an interesting, it's a movie that we don't see this female character a lot.
No.
And I think that that's really awesome. And we don't really see the mom, that type of female character a lot either, to be honest. She's, even though she is a victim, she doesn't play victimized.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are a lot of really interesting, smart things happening in this film, and it's definitely worth it for people to go see it.
Yeah, and we didn't talk about Gabby Hoffman as the tough love friend, mm-hmm. who I thought those scenes with her were really good too and strong. And again, her friend was like going, you know what, I've had it just about up to here with your shit. Like, and you can tell by her actions, it's like, we're getting out of here. Mm-hmm. We're leaving. Yeah, mm-hmm. just give me the check. We're getting out of here. And I thought those scenes were really well done too. And I'm like going, and again, it's the puzzle of the flashbacks. Mm-hmm. You don't know, like, okay, so now something's going on here. How is this falling in? But by the end of the movie, you've taken the journey with her and things actually have fallen into place that you understand. So it sounds like they did do, you know, for you, it must have been completely unique that they did do a fantastic job of cutting a movie.
I was interested to see how they would put this book in a film, and I think they did a really great job. It's kind of like those of us who read The Devil Wears Prada. When you see that movie, you're like, way better.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's another example of a time the movie is way better than the book. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was great. And they captured what was so good about the book, which was the humor. Mm-hmm. So they did capture that really well. Like, cool. That was a reason why you wanted to be pulled through. But
And we, just to throw it out there, for those of you who have read the book, there we do have a review on one of us, Sister Networks.
Yeah, on Book Circle with Jeff Masters. He does, you guys can check out that podcast. We'll have the link to it right next in the playlist. And it's for Book Circle Online. You can check out their review of Wild and then go see the movie, because I don't know if it's out everywhere yet. So go check it out, and then you guys can, you know, check that out. And then we also have, like I said earlier, we have an interview with the actress who plays Stacy, Catherine Duprume, coming up after this. So you guys should stick around for that. Where can they find you guys?
You can find me here, Popcorn Talk Network. I do not have a lot of other social media or AfterBuzz or, you know, around.
Popcorn Talk Network on Twitter. I'm DMovies at DMovies1701.
Awesome. And you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Chloe WestX, as well as on AfterBuzz TV. Thank you guys so much for checking out Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie. And we will see you next week.
Woo!
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.